Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Wayne Levy.
I feel as though running saved my life, and that's why I don't want to say I owe my life to the sport, because that sounds really funny, but I think that's why I enjoy it, and that's why I'm so passionate about it. Because truth be told, Justin, if I did not join that running club, and if I wasn't a runner, I don't know where I would be today and what I would be doing. I don't know if I would be sitting here and doing this podcast with you.
On this episode of The Rundown, I caught up with runner, triathlete, and area developer for VeloFix Quebec, Jeremy Cochran. Whether it was competitive hockey or getting a good education, or more recently running in multi-sport, Jeremy always gave it his 110%. We'll discuss his journey into endurance sports, the challenges beginners face, and all the lessons along the way. It's not always about winning or being the best. In fact, for most of us, it's more about enjoying the process and taking what you can on race day. This episode is brought to you by VeloFix. As runners, there's not much to worry about in terms of equipment maintenance or tune-ups. But for those cyclists and triathletes out there, and speaking from my own experience, finding a bike shop with efficient customer-facing mechanics can be a challenge. Well, now it's time to change gears with VeloFix. With easy online booking, VeloFix sends a maintenance van straight to your door and provides same-day service with a smile. Head to VeloFix.com and use promo code LERUNDOWN15 for 15% off your tune-up. And if you happen to be looking for a bike mechanic gig, VeloFix is looking to expand their fleet in Quebec. Check out VeloFix.com to apply. In this week's news, I know it's hard to find the motivation to get out there and train with no races on the horizon. We have to find the meaning in our daily runs and rediscover why we do it. Personally, running's been a huge help for me mentally. It's that one time every day where I can go outside and get some fresh air, a time to clear my thoughts and push myself if I'm up for it. And sometimes it's just easy and relaxed. While I listen to music or a good podcast, or even work through some ideas in my head. Overall, I think it's really good for mental health. And I'm not just talking about running. It can be anything that gets you moving and staying active. In addition, I've signed up for the Peak Run Performance Virtual Race Series created by episode 48 guest, Jacob Pusey. In the process, he's shining a light on mental health and raising money for the Bigger Than the Trail Foundation. You'll get medals and swag for signing up too. Sounds like a win-win to me. Make sure to check the show notes for links to information about these upcoming events, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. When I got into the world of endurance sport, I don't think I realized how many people I'd come in contact and meet throughout that journey. It's actually a much smaller community than you might think. My next guest I used to work with, we played on the same hockey team, and we found some common ground in endurance sports as well. He's an area developer for VeloFix, which I wish I knew about way back when I was doing my triathlon, in my triathlon days just a few years ago. It would have saved me a couple of trips to the bike shop for sure. But without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you Jeremy Cochran.
Awesome. Thanks very much for the wonderful introduction, Justin. Yeah, we go way back. Enjoyed sharing the ice with you playing hockey, and you were always someone that I really looked up to in my, you know, my early journey as a runner, and as I migrated into more of a multi-sport play, you were someone I always looked up to, and you know, having your incredible progression into, you know, killing Boston Marathon times and qualifying for major marathons is quite an accomplishment, and I look forward to chatting with you today.
Yeah, likewise, and I always get a kick out of, you know, just shooting the shit, if you will, and sharing those stories and journeys, because I think everyone kind of has potential to do things that they didn't think they could do, and that includes yourself. So just anybody who's got like a common interest or love for the sport, it's always fun to kind of kick it around and share those stories. How are you finding, you know, with COVID and everything, your own training? Have you been able to kind of follow through with that?
Yeah, the training has been interesting. I found I had a really massive block in 2020 when COVID first hit us, and you know, race after race after race was canceled, and I was doing a really solid prep for 70.3 in Maine, and that got canceled. Then a couple other local events in Montreal got canceled, and so my season ended without having a race in 2021, and that was disappointing, as I felt that my, you know, for my own standards, my fitness was definitely at its peak. So I had a little bit of an off season, and then got back into it around the end of October and November, and that's kind of when reality hit. And, you know, there probably wouldn't be a race coming up in 2021. So I've kind of, you know, gone into a bit of a maintenance mode. So, you know, a little unsettling that I wasn't able to race. It doesn't look like there'll be any major races in 2021, but, you know, it's a good opportunity to use that time to, you know, decompress and, you know, do other things that I'm passionate about. And, you know, but I'm very rested and eager to get back into another massive training block, which should be starting, I would say, probably this Saturday. We'll start getting into wrapping up and getting into the intense training again. So I'm looking forward to that.
For sure. And so what does maintenance mode look like for you? And is there anything, any kind of different things that you're doing to complement the endurance sport? You know, is there like more self-care? I don't know what that might look like for you.
Yeah, that's a great question. So maintenance mode to me, I'm usually in around 8.5 to 10 hours of multi-sport training and kind of maintenance / you know, call it off season. You know, throwing in another massive wrinkle, not being able to swim. So having to provide some type of upper body work and cross training has been imperative just to kind of keep those upper body muscles that you use in swimming, you know, at least moving and somewhat in motion. So I do some cross-country skiing, and I also do a bit of fat biking as well. So I'll kind of mix those into heavy indoor training cycles as well as brick workouts. And of course, the famous Sunday long run, which I'm sure you're more than familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And have you found it tough to stay motivated to train even without a race on the calendar?
So the motivation hasn't been the major challenge. The major challenge has been kind of the wear and tear on the body, right? So swimming is just that, you know, that perfect offset for, you know, intense bike, intense running, which are a little more high impact related, where swimming is just, you know, a lot of mobility and, you know, and endurance as well. But it's just a great little breakup between the biking and running. So not having the 2 or 3 swims a week in there, it just had me oversaturate the biking and running. And that started to take its toll. That started to take its toll on the body. They're a little more fatiguing and exhausting. So, you know, having to supersaturate those two disciplines and the lack of swimming added a little more impact to the body than it was traditionally used to when you're able to get to the pool and have those, you know, 2 to 3 swims a week. So that was the challenge that I had. The motivation wasn't the issue. What it was, the additional high impact exercises in the body started to, you know, chip away at me, where, you know, I'm not a 170 pound athlete. I'm in, you know, just under 200 pounds. So that additional impact, you know, added up and, you know, I didn't say it hurt me, but it put additional stress on my body that wasn't always there.
Mm-hmm. And you notice like how effective the swimming is, not just for your cardio, but also as like an active recovery too.
Exactly. Yeah. Swimming was great. So you kind of have your, you know, your endurance swim, your speed swim, and then a technical swim. The technical swim was just fantastic for, you know, you getting better at swimming, but it was excellent for some active recovery. And swimming in general is just you know, a perfect, you know, intersection of recovery and endurance. And it's a lot of fun as well. I mean, I don't come from a swimming background. So it was always exciting learning swimming and building upon your technique and just seeing those gains happen in swimming that you probably didn't see, you know, similar to the early days when you're biking and running, you see those gains happen right away. So swimming was an extremely rewarding part of the training process.
Mm-hmm. And so if the events don't motivate you, it sounds like some of the training does. Is that really why you do endurance sports?
Yeah, I really enjoy the psychological grind, and I'm a big picture person by nature, right? And I think that marathon training or multi-sport training and endurance training, it's just, you know, brick by brick by brick and building that foundation and getting stronger and stronger, you know, getting through workout, you know, workout A and then getting to workout B and so on and so forth. It's just that big puzzle, that big picture thing just really suits my personality. And I take a lot of fun and a lot of pride in that process. And the race is just kind of, you know, race is a race. I mean, I do it as a, you know, as a form of exercise and a form of recreation. And then, you know, I run the race. I'm really looking forward to, you know, taking that week of recovery and then going into the next training block. So, you know, having that foundational piece where every single workout is just a larger piece of a puzzle that leads to a race is, you know, a lot of the reward that I get out of it. And it's a big draw in terms of why I really enjoy training so much.
And I love too that you're a big fan of the sport too, like you follow the stuff and all the events. And have you found some joy in following along, even though the events have been limited? A lot of virtual stuff too happening.
Yeah, I mean Ironman VR has been really cool, and you know, just seeing Zwift take off and kind of go into that next level of popularity where now it's becoming commonplace. And, you know, just the triathlon community in general, a lot of the lead athletes have just done a fantastic job of, you know, documenting their journeys and how they're coping with COVID and how they're dealing with not being able to race and, you know, having to deal with sponsorships, you know, sponsors dropping them, just the intersection of, you know, training and the athletes and how they're using social media and the various platforms out there to, you know, communicate with the larger, you know, community and the population at large has been a really interesting time for, you know, just the endurance world in general. So it's been really interesting to see things progress that way, whether it's Lionel doing, you know, a fantastic job on his YouTube channel, or whether it's, you know, Eric Lagerstrom and Paul Finley doing a good job with, you know, that triathlon life. That's been a really cool thing to see during, you know, a really difficult time for, you know, the global population at large.
Yeah, it looks like they're making the most out of a tough situation, since they're like so used to, you know, they rely on those events to feed themselves too, right?
So that's right. Yeah, it's income for them.
For sure. How has the COVID affected the other aspects of your life?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, you know, I think Ottawa shut down on, you know, March 13th, and I work for a startup company in Ottawa called Tahama, and we ended up, you know, sending all our employees home on March 16th. So everyone's been fully remote since March 16th, 2020. And, you know, we have a very distributed workforce. So a lot of our, you know, our teams are remote and in different countries and different places, but we did have a headquarters. We were headquartered out of Ottawa. We still are, but, you know, our office was out of Ottawa and everyone's been at home since March 16th. So, you know, working remotely is not a big change for anyone, but you seem to be doing a little more work. You don't have, you know, the commute back and forth to the office, which is, you know, great, but it's also a good opportunity to, you know, check out on a few things and make a phone call to someone you haven't spoke to in a while. So some of that has gone away, but, you know, as a whole, I mean, our company has adapted and done a really good job, but, you know, you're able to work a little bit more and be productive. So, you know, at large, it's been business as usual. So it hasn't impacted us. And, you know, as a result of COVID and some of the technologies that our organization, you know, builds and sells, has allowed us to grow, as well. So it's been, definitely a growth mode for us, but it's, you know, a little bit unfortunate that a global pandemic was a compelling event that helped us grow. So to sum that up, it would be, you know, mixed emotions across the board between, you know, working from home and capitalizing what has become a difficult time for the human race.
Yeah, for sure. It's me, for example, I took a job at a gold mine in Nunavut. So that's, That's kind of how my life has changed.
That's a pretty drastic change.
Yeah, right. I'm used to working in Montreal in a studio and then completely different. Didn't even study that field or have any experience in it, but hey, it's working out. So
it's amazing.
I like to take things back to the beginning.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. So exactly where life takes us. So, you know, where did you grow up and, you know, were you athletic as a kid? Was endurance sports something looking back that you could see yourself having gotten into?
Yeah, that's funny. So, you know, as a youngster, I, you know, was born in Ottawa and I, you know, spent some time in Ottawa and spent some time in Winnipeg and in the prairies. And then moved back to Ottawa when I was 13. So, you know, as a youngster, my primary sport and, you know, true passion was, like a lot of Canadian kids, was hockey. And, you know, I fell in love with hockey and the sport has just been, you know, a massive part of my entire life, you know, growing up and still is. So I spent, you know, my winters playing hockey in outdoor rinks and indoor arenas. And I was playing, you know, AAA hockey, you know, throughout my youth and early teens and, you know, played, you know, tier one and tier two junior hockey. So I had a lot of fun playing hockey. You know, there was a bit of endurance sports in terms of cross training, running decent 5Ks, but more as a fitness tool and as a cross training tool. So, you know, growing up, I didn't see, I had no idea that I would find endurance sports so, you know, so rewarding and, you know, essentially addicting. So it was a bit of a surprise to me growing up, you know, primarily as a hockey player.
Mm-hmm. And like that, that's kind of like how I grew up too, playing hockey and soccer and like looking back at like gym class. I was talking to my sister about this, but some of the testing that they had us do is often endurance related, even whether it be in here in Canada, like the beep test, running from wall to wall, or a 12-minute run around the soccer field, how many laps we could do, are places where I actually did well in. So the fact that I'm in, you know, running marathons now, it kind of makes sense, you know? So is there anything that stands out to you, like when you were a kid, that kind of makes you think like, oh, well, yeah, that makes sense now?
Yeah, I would think like when I was, you know, playing my best or at my peak, I was able to, you know, roll out, you know, be able to jump over the boards and go again and go again and go again and kind of get stronger and naturally progress as, you know, as the game went on from, you know, the first period to the second period. And I always felt that I always played my best in the third period. And I was just, that's just the way it was. But then, you know, I started endurance training and I figured out like, hey, I just, for some whatever reason, you know, I was able to have, you know, a stronger back half of a marathon or a half marathon than I was in the first half. And I think it was just kind of the conditioning and the mentality of, you know, how a hockey game progressed. I think that naturally just spilled over to what I did in endurance sports. So I always kind of wondered, you know, why that was. My coach would be like, well, why is the last 5K or half marathon faster than, you know, the first half or the first five? Or the middle five, right? And I just really didn't have an explanation to it. And I just started thinking about it. I think, well, maybe it's because of my hockey background and just how games would progress and intensity would build up between the periods. Now that's a good thing and a good skill to have, but I just think my hockey background, you know, led to that just being a way that transferred over nicely to endurance sports. I mean, I kind of go out of the gate slow and kind of build out throughout the race. And I think that it was definitely my hockey background that led to that capacity in triathlon and running.
Did you take your training seriously to be able to perform in hockey like you do now with your running and triathlon?
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't. I wish I had that mental focus and that discipline as a teenager that I have now as an adult training triathlon. No, I cannot say that answer is no. And I often wonder if I had the same discipline and consistency in my hockey days, where that would have led me, as opposed to what I have now as a, you know, a mid-pack age grouper in my endurance career.
Mm. So did you see a future in hockey, or where was your, like, growing up, where was your interest?
Yeah, I would say I definitely saw a future where I could potentially make an earning or a living, you know, in probably a couple of leagues in Europe. So I think that would have been my focus to, you know, maybe my late 20s and early 30s as I kind of figure out what I wanted to do as a full-time career, as a way to kind of bridge a gap. I definitely saw that as a potential, you know, stop, you know, throughout my life, but that didn't happen.
Mm. And so did you have running with hockey and then it just continued after hockey, or was there a gap in there, or
how? Yeah, there was definitely a gap. I did a lot of, weightlifting and bodybuilding and, you know, essentially what just turned out to be what is CrossFit now. I found that I had a lot of natural strength and, you know, enjoyed pushing myself. So, you know, doing a lot of, you know, powerlifting and bodybuilding was something I did in kind of my mid 20s to early 30s. So there was definitely that phase. So that was just a lot of fun and rewarding, and just, you know, it's just really good to push yourself that way. So, you know, moving into the, you know, the multi-sport and then, you know, endurance phase was even more of a surprise. And it was just a lot of, you know, unwinding of, you know, moving, you know, slow twitch, you know, fast twitch when moving heavy, you know, heavy loads into, you know, trying to develop slow twitch for endurance was a confusing message to my body. But, you know, it probably took me a good 3 years to kind of, you know, finally get that enhanced and get that speed, you know, build up that strength. It took a while. And I think it's because of the phase where I did a lot of weightlifting and, you know, essentially CrossFit that made that transition into, you know, full-time endurance. That's my passion and hobby, a little harder than it would have been from someone that was starting from, you know, ground zero.
Right. Well, I see, like, you seem like a guy that goes all in when you go into something, you know?
Yeah.
Did you, like, what was the reason for to get into the weightlifting and then do that, like, all out? And then why transition to endurance sports?
Yeah, I find myself just always needing to want to challenge myself and, you know, just getting stronger at, you know, squatting and deadlifting and bench press, and those major muscle movements was always just wanted to see how far I could take that and how strong I can get. And, you know, that's just my mentality. And that's also, you know, moved into endurance sports now, right? Hey, can you get under 5 hours in a 70.3? Can you get under the 11-hour barrier in a, you know, a full Ironman? Could you maybe one day qualify for the Boston Marathon? Like how quick can you go and how far, you know, how far can your athletic ability take you? And the only way to do that is to be 100% committed and, you know, find a goal, pick where you want to be and put a plan together and see where he gets there. That's just how I'm wired, and that's just how my DNA works. From, you know, probably very similar to you, and having, I know, your amazing goal of running all five major marathons.
Mm, yeah. That's definitely something on my list, and it's been postponed, but I still run, you know. I think the pandemic has taught me that more than anything, is that I don't, like you, I don't need the race to try and push myself. If anything, I see it as an opportunity to train, so I'll be ready when that race happens, you know. So changing, you know, coaching programs, different types of workouts, this kind of thing, to kind of, while everyone's kind of not sure about what's happening, you know, we'll just keep training, and then when those events open up again, then we'll be ready.
I think we, you know, we often overlook just the overall health and wellness benefits that come from consistently training. You know, we always try to focus on our goals and our end goals and kind of the, you know, the premier races or aid races. And we often overlook that, you know, consistently putting in the work and training day to day is just, you know, massively beneficial to your overall health at large. And I think the pandemic has, you know, allowed me to focus on that a little bit and say, like, hey, there is no Ironman around the corner. There is no 70.3 race on the calendar this year, but, you know, hey, you bike 250 kilometers, you ran 50 kilometers, and you swam 7K. I mean, that's just overall good for, for you as a human being. And it was just kind of interesting to take a look at that and see that inside of Training Peaks or see that inside of Garmin that, you know, hey, that's a lot of mileage. That's good for, that's just good for me as a whole. And it doesn't matter if there's a race on the calendar or not. So goes back to that point I made where, you know, loving the training and loving the progression and kind of the building blocks is really the best part of it.
For sure. Do you remember when the switch happened, when you decided you wanted to pursue running? And, you know, since you're a bigger built guy, you know, there has to be some challenges that you face, early on. Can you share some of that?
Absolutely. So I still am, but I was, you know, in my late 20s and most of my 30s, I was building, you know, playing, you know, big role inside of, you know, technology companies. And that just, you know, that just took a massive demand, you know, on myself in terms of time. And, you know, my eating habits reflected that. And I was getting, you know, more and more out of shape. And, you know, I just wanted to, you know, I just took a step back and looked at myself and just said, hey, there's a lot of life here left in me. I want to set some goals. I think I'm a decent athlete. You know, I have a decent athletic scope. I want to test myself. So I thought that running was just a naturally a good way to get active again and start becoming healthier. And it just really, you know, it just really took off from there, you know, just running your first charity 5K and running your first 10K and, you know, looking up to other people, you know, yourself included, and who's out there and how they're running and what their times are like. And it just was just another way to challenge myself. And it just, you know, just one thing led to another. Then I just legitimately found myself super passionate and fell in love with the sport, fell in love with the sport of running. And, you know, that, you know, transitioned into multi-sport again. And the last leg of the triathlon is the run. And it's definitely the most rewarding and painful, you know, during that time frame. But it's just a really, really good way to, you know, put, you know, mentally decompartmentalize, think about nothing else but training. And I think the run is just a perfect outlet for that, and just a super beneficial and healthy thing to do. So yeah, it was just a great way to get back into shape. And then before you knew it, I fell completely in love with it.
So when you first started, like how often were you heading out and for how long? And
yeah,
you know, I would, was there some growing pains and, you know,
oh, there were some, there were some growing pains. It never really hurt my body though. Right. I was fortunate that it never hurt my knees or never hurt my back or my shins or my feet. I never had any of those pains. So I had no problems getting out the door. And, you know, it slowly progressed from, you know, running, you know, 20 minutes to running 30 minutes and, you know, running 40 minutes and, you know, just, you know, but just trying to get better at running those times. It was more focused on time than actual distance. So kind of once you got, you know, stronger and stronger at running for, you know, 30 minutes and 40 minutes, you know, next thing you knew within a year as running, you know, Sunday long runs were in the neighborhood of, you know, 23 to 28K. And it was just amazing how quickly that came together. So I was fortunate in the fact that it never hurt me to run. I could get out the door and it never hurt my body and I never felt banged up. So I was, you know, very fortunate in that way. So getting out the door, getting out the door three times a week and, you know, doing 25K and then four times a week, you know, doing 40, 50 and, you know, getting up to, you know, 60K a week when you're, you know, full at the peak of a half Ironman build. It's pretty amazing. You just look back on it now and it just blows your mind where you're just like, hey, I'm going to go out for a quick training run on a Tuesday. In the middle of winter and you look down at your watch and you find out you just ran 14K. So it's just like most things in life, right? Anything worth doing just comes gradually, and the progression is incremental. And, you know, there's no better reminder that progression is incremental than doing endurance sports.
Right. And so I think, you know, one of the reasons why, because I noticed my running got a lot better. I was doing this girl I knew was doing these boot camp classes, and she was doing them once a week. So she was a good friend, and I was like, I'm going to go and support her once a week, and they were $10 a class or whatever. But I would do these boot camp classes, and then all of a sudden, like, I didn't make the connection. Like, when I was training early on for running, I didn't have a coach, or I didn't have a plan. I just would go out and run whatever and try and run faster and faster every time I went out. But where I noticed the difference in my results of like the one race I would sign up for a year was when I started doing these boot camps. So I started to build more muscle and around yep. the, and supporting the areas that I was using while running. And so my body was stronger. So I think your background in the weightlifting probably helped you and still helping you because you have those muscles that are, and the stability already kind of built in. And then now you're adding the endurance component, and that's probably, I mean, I don't know for sure, but.
No, that's a really good point. And I have to think that you're right there, because if I look at, you look at a hockey background, a lot of that is heavy lower body, right? And very, very quick sprinty work on in a hockey game or in a hockey practice is kind of similar to how you're using your legs on your bike. So I found that having a hockey background really transitioned nicely to spending a lot of time on the bike and just having, you know, a super hardcore saturated workout and kind of your, you know, your glutes and your calves and your hamstrings and your quads really was a nice progression. If you take a look at Heather Jackson is one of the top 70.3 female athletes in the Ironman circuit, and she comes from a hockey background, and she flew up the ranks of Ironman. So she was, she was definitely in the U.S. women's national program stream, and then she moved on from that and went to Ironman, and she just flew through the ranks. And I think she credits a lot of that to her hockey background helping her, you know, have a, you know, really phenomenal bike workout and having that, you know, that strength and that muscle transition nicely to her, you know, her powerhouse bike workout. So I think that is probably a fair point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And similarly, like what you're saying, I don't think I've ever been in better running shape than I was when I was doing triathlon. And that's probably when I ran my best marathon time, actually. So now just doing the run training, you got to do a bit more strength. Do you still do some lifting?
I do shoulder workout to move into, to help me with swimming. And I still do some, I do lower workouts as well. So I'll do, you know, some squat or some lunges and that type of stuff. I will still do lower body, and then I'll focus now on hamstrings where I didn't spend as much attention on that muscle group, pre-triathlon. As I do now, I find that there's a lot of hamstring work to be able to properly have an efficient pedal stroke. So yeah, lower body and shoulder work is what I focus on now when I do weight train.
Nice. Do you remember what the first race you signed up for was?
In the first running race or triathlon race? Yeah. So the first running race I did was a 10K. I did the 10K. I don't know when it was. I did it with my fiance Louise. We did the Ottawa race weekend 10K. And I remember I did it in an hour and 8 minutes. I'll never forget it. It was about 35 degrees outside, super hot. I was super proud of myself. It was not a fast time. My girlfriend probably ran, and she was probably in 50-minute shape, and I made her run an hour and eight, but then we crossed the line together, and it was Ottawa race weekend, I think. I'm not sure when it was. It might have been 2013 or 2014, but it was it was a lot of fun, and I'll never forget it. And then the first Ironman I did was two summers ago. I did the Esprit Ironman, or the Esprit Triathlon Festival in Montreal. I did the Olympic distance, and it was it was a lot of fun as well. The fun was super, super interesting. Really, really slow time in the swim, and the bike course going through downtown Montreal in that area was really well laid out and really fast. So that was a lot of fun as well. So those were my first two races, first two endurance races, and I'll never forget them.
Amazing. And that, I have two questions as a follow-up to that. But so what were some early lessons that you learned after, you know, because training is one thing, but then when you go out and do a race, maybe there's some things that catch you off guard or that you're not quite sure about, and you have some good learnings there. Like, can you share some of those?
Yeah, I think with the triathlon is that you really don't practice transitioning. So much time can be gained or lost in transition. So, you know, having some kind of consistent transition simulation or training or focusing on that is really easy to ignore. And, you know, putting some type of emphasis on that is really, really important. It's very easy to do. It is not painful, and it really helps. You know, really does help your time in the end. So, you know, my first triathlon, my transition in T1 was something ridiculous. I don't know what it was, 9 or 10 minutes or something weird. It took forever to get out of a wetsuit and find a bike helmet. It was just brutal. So I made sure to focus on that a little bit. And then I think I had a combined T1 and T2 time when I did 70.3 main of like 9.5 minutes between the two of them. So definitely took the opportunity to focus on transitioning a little bit. And then on the in the running, I think the real lesson there is that you're really never going to have a perfect run, right? So, you know, not too off, you're not going to have, you know, a great run. So it's kind of, you know, what can you do when you don't have a great day on the run? And challenging yourself to say that, hey, I may not have a great run today, but I'm going to push myself and challenge myself no matter what, no matter how much it hurts. And if it hurts more than when I trained, that you're probably not going to have a great day on the run. So, you know, kind of get used to it, mentally accept it, and try to push through it.
So what are some goals that you have when you go into an event?
Honestly, I've put in the work. My goal when I do an event is that I have a general time goal, but I don't put a ton of focus on it. What I really like to focus on is just give your absolute best, lay it all out on the line, and take what the day gives you. If you're having a terrible day, fight through it and grind it out and do absolutely what you can. If you're having a fantastic day, grind it out even harder and push yourself to the utmost to get that best time. But really, you know, challenging yourself to do the best and take what the day gives you, and the time will take care of itself.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of a time where maybe you weren't so strong mentally, or you don't take me for a guy that's going to give up, but has there ever been a moment where you thought, I don't know if I can do this?
You know what? I don't experience that in the race, but I experience that a lot on my really intense bike rides. I'm just like, I'm going to quit. This is ridiculous. I can't do this. What's the point in doing this? I'm sitting on an indoor trainer. It's minus 25 outside. My race is in August. Like, who's going to know that I bailed out on that. So there's a lot of mental battle that happens on the intense indoor training sessions. And I have really, really have to ignore that, turn that switch off, and kind of gut through it and make sure that interval gets done properly and just survive the interval and move on to the next interval. And that's the name of the game, is that it's a super hard challenge, and it's really a game of survival. It's getting through that, I don't know, 360 to 370, you know, 4 minute, 5 minute interval is just get through that. You got a recovery set right around the corner. Enjoy that recovery set and suck it up and do it again. So it's really the mental preparedness and the battle internally all happens on the training. And I have to give my coach is just a world-class triathlete, an unbelievable human being. Mark Flagel with Bart Coaching, they're out of Ottawa, and he just does a really good job of preparing and getting me ready for the races, and all the hard tests are in the training, and it just leads well to a really good race.
Have you always been coached, or
in triathlon? Actually, I have. So when I started taking running seriously, I quickly concluded that I had no clue what I'm doing. It's like going out and running aimlessly for an hour or 2 hours or at a random pace is just, it just didn't make sense. And it was completely foreign. So when I started running seriously, I had a coach, and then I really wanted to get into triathlon. And from day one, I had a coach with triathlon, and with the way, you know, the complexity of the three sports and Ironman and managing intervals and, you know, doing that on, you know, on a time starved schedule, you know, wife and kids and, you know, work is just super hard. So I didn't mess around with that. I let coaches do the coaching and, you know, I lean heavily to do the programming and, you know, I really trust them. They know what they're doing. They've had fantastic results and, you know, I'm seeing the results myself. So yeah, with the, anyone getting into triathlon or considering getting into triathlon, I highly recommend A, working with a coach, or B, sitting down with a coach and having a coach kind of, you know, just do a general baseline assessment and having him or her put together a training plan for you that's come from someone that has a coaching background. It's just going to save you a ton of time. It's going to save you a ton of guesswork. And it's just the right way to do it. You won't get injuries. There'll be, you know, no second guessing yourself. Everything will be laid out in front of you and, you know, you can go out and just, it's just going to allow you to A, be successful at it quicker, but having so much more fun with it.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause I guess if you're going to put the training in, you might as well, you know, triathlons, for running, you know, you might be able to get away with following a plan online and that sort of thing. And the investment, I think, for running is fairly low. But for triathlon, because I was going to comment, like, not everyone's got the money to pay for that level of coaching, you know? And that's where the barrier to entry for triathlon might be a little bit different than it would be for
running. Is a little bit higher, but, you know, if you're going to invest in equipment, maybe gear down and go a little bit lower on the equipment and make sure you've got, you know, if you got a budget in place, make sure that budget includes coaching. If you need to, you know, save a little bit on your shoes or your wetsuit or whatever, definitely do that and invest that savings into a coach.
How would you suggest going about getting a coach and what are the important things to look for in a coach?
Yeah, I would take a look at, you know, try to find a tri club that, you know, seems to align with what you're doing. And there's all sorts of tri clubs, right? And there's tri clubs that are focused on, you know, doing a really job and getting into the, you know, ranking systems in the 70.3. And then there's social tri clubs. And then there's, you know, tri clubs in the middle, really just trying to size up and find the right fit for what you want to get out of the sport. And then, you know, work with that tri club, and then, you know, that tri club will have, you know, a variance of coaching in terms of, you know, what your goals are and how, what you want to get out of the sport. I'm kind of in the middle. I mean, I definitely want to be as good as I can get, but, you know, understand that, you know, I got a busy career and a family and I don't have a ton of time and I'm probably never going to get the Kona or the 70.3 world. So, you know, having a coach that can help me get the most out of my time investment is something important to me. And I've got a, you know, great relationship with my coach and he understands that and does what he can to, you know, builds the program, you know, where I kind of got 12 to 17 hours a week to invest, where there's other people in my program that are, you know, their goal is to get the Kona and their goal is, you know, not only get the Kona, but place in their age group. And then there's people who want to get to the 70.3 world. So it's really finding that tri club that has, you know, somewhat of an alignment in terms of what you want to get out of the sport yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I actually got a great piece of advice from when I did my first Ironman. I went to Roll Down, even though I had no chance. Roll Down is they call out the names ranked by age group, and those are the people that get to go to Kona, and there's a certain amount of tickets for every age group, and there was a 70-year-old that got his ticket and his name was Tommy, and I think there was two people in his age group and he told me, I said, congratulations, you know, he's been numerous times to Kona, Hawaii for the world champs, and he said, he gave me the best piece of advice I could have ever received. And he said, at my age, you don't need to beat the competition. You just have to outlive them. And I thought that was some of the best advice I could have got. So I think, you know, anybody that wants to make it to Kona, just, you know, keep at it. And eventually you'll end up in an age group that's less competitive.
I don't know if it's less competitive or it's harder. You look at some of the... to be able to do a full Ironman at 70 itself is impressive. And then the times, like if you're doing an Ironman at 70, you're obviously in fantastic shape and your time probably takes care of itself. But oftentimes it's not an age group where it's got 600 athletes competing for, you know, two Kona slots.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, anyways, all the things I was kind of laughing at as you were mentioning it, I've gone through as well with the transition zones and all those funny things that we don't always think of, you know, but it's true. They take time. You know, my coaches used to say like, hey, you know, are you having a sandwich, you know? So, oh yeah, you mentioned your fiance and running together as well. Has that been something that you guys have been able to come together on and explore together? And, you know, also how important is it to have a supportive partner?
Yeah, it's very important to have a supportive partner. It's a funny story. She got me into running and I got her in the triathlon. So she's actually migrated and crossed over from, you know, predominant run training into like the triathlon training. But yeah, the investment in time to be half decent or kind of accomplish your goals or get close to your goals in triathlon, you definitely need a supportive partner, you need a supportive family, you need, you know, your loved ones need to be on board as well, because it's not so much the training, it's when you're not training, you need a decent amount of recovery and you're not as helpful in certain areas around the house or shoveling the driveway and those sorts of things. So there's additional, you know, workload or burden around household stuff that needs to be spread across others in the family. If they're not on board on that, then it's just probably not the best idea, or, you know, you can expect some of those relationships to maybe not be as strong as they were, you know, pre Ironman training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you guys seem to have been able to kind of flourish in that.
We have, yeah. We've been really lucky. So oftentimes a weekend will look like I'll have an intense bike workout in the morning, and then, you know, in the summertime, probably a brick run after that, and then get a bite to eat. She'll have a meal ready to go for both of us. You know, a bit of recovery. Then, you know, her and I will either go for. She'll have a run, and I'll join her run, and I'll act as a little more of a recovery run for me. And I'll be behind her a little bit, but, you know, we'll still be spending time together doing what we love to do. And, you know, oftentimes we'll go for, you know, a slowish, longer bike ride on Sunday after my long run. So we've been able to make it work, but we both got a passion for multi-sport and endurance lifestyle. So it works out well.
That's great. That's so great. Just like it's improved, like seems to have like added a component to your relationship and improved that too. Like, have you found it's improved other parts of your life?
Yeah, it has. I mean, I find that I don't quit on things maybe that don't come naturally or super easy to me, like outside of sport. I mean, it's just little weird things where, you know, hey, if I'm looking for something around the house and I'm like, hey, I can't find it, I'm like, well, you know, I just talk to myself internally and say, hey, don't quit. You know, you got a super challenging bike ride yesterday. You got through that, no problem. So why are you quitting on finding whatever this needs to be? So just little things like that, you just kind of motivate yourself internally to not give up. And it could be something stupid as, you know, where did you leave a set of car keys, or where did you leave this or that? So I find that, you know, it has spilled over, and, you know, the motivation to get through tough workouts is, you know, spilled over into other aspects of my life. So it's interesting how that comes together.
Mm-hmm. And have you found that you take recovery to another level and maybe also the way you eat too, or has that kind of adapted and changed over time?
Yeah. So recovery, I don't say I do a fantastic job, but I think that, you know, for the average age grouper, the average person that's working full time and got a family, I think recovery is something that goes to the wayside, you know, somewhat. So if there's an area that I could probably, you know, focus on, it's definitely a recovery. Now, diet is interesting. I find that I pretty consistently healthy, but I found that, you know, I don't need to starve myself. Like, I essentially eat what I need to eat or what I want to eat during the big part of my training block. But I find it's very beneficial to, you know, six weeks out, make a super hard, strong push those last 6 weeks to, you know, kind of drop that extra weight before your race or your primary event, because it will pay dividends, and especially in the heat. So, I mean, eat what you need to eat, eat what you like, you know, keep it definitely healthy, have decent portion sizes, but the last 6 weeks out, really challenge yourself and try to push your diet and clean it up as much as possible. And I found that, you know, having that balance that has worked out well for me, where you're not kind of, you know, super depleting yourself in terms of what you're eating throughout your entire training block, but the last 6 weeks out, really, really make that push. And I found that that's worked well for me, because it's giving me the nutrients and, you know, the caloric density I need to get through workouts. But the last 6 weeks, you know, really, really strip it down and push it back and, you know, challenge yourself to drop those, you know, last few pounds, if at all possible.
So what do you use for fuel? Like, what do you eat before, let's say, trainings or events? And what do you, because nutrition in triathlon is just so important.
It's the fourth discipline. So I find myself, I go a little heavier on the protein than I probably should, but I kind of keep, 60% on the protein, you know, 30 carbs, and then 10% fat. So that's kind of where I like to balance it. And I eyeball all of that. So I don't weigh food or count macros, but I kind of keep it in that range. And then, during the event, I'm probably do 100, you know, 150 calories an hour, but, I find that I definitely take a salt supplement during long runs, or during a 73-point race. I'll do a salt tab or salt capsule, you know, 5, 6, 7 times throughout the race, and that really makes a big difference for me. I'm a bit bigger guy and a heavier sweater, so if I've got a supplemental salt resource, that really helps me out. And, you know, being diligent on that and not skipping it. So, you know, every 30, 40, 50 minutes, take a salt tablet. And for me, that makes a world of difference.
And so what are you eating during the, let's say, during the bike and run? Is it gels that you like, or are you?
More, yeah, food, I'm kinda? traditionally gel. So I'll do a gel before the swim. I'll do a gel out of the swim, and then I'll do about, say, in the bike, I'll probably do 6 to 7 gels. And then in T2, I'll do a honey sticker waffle.
Nice.
And then I'll probably do maybe 2 or 3 gels throughout the run, depending on how I'm feeling. But that rotation or thereabouts gets me what I need to do. And then, of course, the supplementation. It's taking me a while to figure it out, but that's roughly what works for me. And it depends on the day, right? If it's hot or not, sometimes I'll take more or take less. I wouldn't say I'm quite like Lionel Sanders, where I'm weighing out bottles to the actual, to the actual milliliter, but I've got a roundabout routine that it definitely helps. So as long as the salt intake is high, I can usually get through it. And then you're probably looking at probably 10, 12, 13 gels throughout the race.
For sure. Yeah. It's always interesting to see what people are fueling with. And for me, the challenge, Ironman 2 is the, I changed to a vegan, plant-based fuel. So that was even bigger challenge to kind of see what would work and how I would get the energy I needed and proteins, et cetera, to kind of make that work. But it can be done. I'm living proof. So
yeah, there's definitely, you see more and more people in the endurance world that are adopting a vegan lifestyle. It's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing I also mentioned in the intro, there's some other part of it is, like, you know, every race season, you got to bring your bike to the shop and, meet the mechanic. And I know personally, when I first started out in the triathlon world or even just cycling, that was always a big thing for me. I don't know why, but early on, even though, you know, it might have come from a recommendation, I didn't have the greatest experience with bike shops or techs. And I think it can be an intimidating place, especially if you don't know much. Like for a runner, you just, you got your running shoes and there's not much maintenance to do. But anytime you have to incorporate any kind of mechanics, and like our bikes are our technical pieces to be able to do the sport that we love, that posed a challenge for me. So I guess that brings me to, you know, VeloFix and your role with that company, and maybe you can just share a little bit of how you got into that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, falling in love with multi-sport and, you know, in particular, the biking discipline has, you know, just took a super big interest in it. And, you know, similar to your experiences, I just always found it hard to find time to get my bike tuned or take it to a shop or take it to a mechanic that I liked. And, you know, oftentimes they were booked and didn't have a ton of interest in doing it. And when they would do it, they would kind of gloss over the thing. And, you know, having a perfectly tuned bike and making sure everything is running optimally is super important to complete the race. And, you know, obviously very important if you want to have success and get as close to your goals as possible. So, you know, that experience, I just thought that, you know, in general, the bike industry was underserviced, and in particular, triathletes were underserviced. And that kind of led me to, you know, take out VeloFix franchises for all of Quebec. So I'm the area developer for all of Montreal, Quebec City, the Laurentians, and Gatineau. So essentially anything with population in Quebec, I'm the area developer for VeloFix, and I own those franchises. And, you know, our focus is on just getting people out there to ride more and just giving people the ability to allow us go direct to their house. They just go to a website, enter in their postal code, pick their tune package, and then we show up and take their bike and service it inside of our mobile bike shop. And you touched on something really key that, you know, oftentimes the bike shop is super intimidating. You bring your bike in, the mechanic asks you, you know, hey, what's wrong with your bike? You're just like, I don't know. I can't explain it. It's just not working well. It's not shifting well. I'm not too sure. Do I have the right air pressure in my tires? Like, oh, that's a bit of a cumbersome and intimidating experience where, you know, we democratize all of that. You know, you come online, the mechanic comes to your site. You know, obviously, you know, wears his mask and has his gloves on and is respecting COVID protocols. And we take your bike and we bring it inside the van and we properly tune it for you. And, you know, we make sure that your bike is running optimally. We make recommendations on any of the parts of the service that you need. And then, we give the bike back to you and you go out and get to ride more and enjoy it. You don't have to drive to the bike shop. You don't have to get there and find out that your bike's going to be, you know, out of service for, you know, 2 or 3 days. We take care of it on the spot and, you know, we're able to give you more time so you can, you know, spend more time on your bike and spend more time training. So it's a very, you know, seamless way and direct to consumer way where we can help people to, you know, tune their bikes so they're out there enjoying active life cycle and cycling more than they were before. So yeah, the multi-sport career or obsession has, you know, really helped, you know, identify a gap in the market where we think that the, you know, the bike business in Quebec is maybe a little on the lacking side, just because the demand is so high and there's just not a ton of, you know, reputable bike services, you know, across the province as a whole. So, you know, I saw a bit of an opportunity to kind of marry a couple different passions and take on this adventure. So we're really looking forward to, you know, getting out there and meeting cyclists and, you know, helping them make sure that bikes are tuned up properly and they got the equipment and the, you know, the components to enjoy their time so they can maximize the riding pleasure. And the business is operational in Quebec now. We're hiring mechanics in the Montreal and Quebec City region. So we're super excited.
Awesome. That's yeah. And it, you're right. It like fulfills this need. It's not there, right? Well, the need is there, of course. And Like
yeah, the need is there, and the bike shop, services on selling bikes, and our focus is on the service component on. So it's a really good synergy between selling bikes and having bikes, that are serviced properly and tuned up, and we only do tunes and then minor parts that a bike would need in order to support that tune. So. It's a great synergy between the cyclist, the bike shop, and the need for properly tuned bikes.
So how many vans you have out there on the road?
So we've got three on the road now. We're launching another two probably by midsummer. So we will have five vans on the road running by the middle of the summer. So there'll be three in Montreal. There'll be one in Gatineau, and then one in potentially Tremblant or Quebec City, one or the other. So we think that we can properly service the region with five vans now, and at the end of 2022 we should have eight vans in full-time circulation.
Wow, that's great. And is it comparable in pricing as well to what bike shops would charge? Because I think when I was gonna get my bike tuned up, like a full tune-up, I feel like it was like in the 2 to 250 range. I guess it depends where you go, but how does it compare?
We're right there. So our basic tune is $99, and then we have an overhaul tune, which is $149, and then our overhaul tune is in the 249 range. So we're very competitive to the bike shops, and we all source parts from the same supplier, so our parts are competitive as well, but our distinct advantage is that you pick a time slot that's convenient to you. You go to the website, we show up at your door, we tune your bike right in front of you. So there's no lead time, there's no traveling, there's no back and forth. Literally, you're just going to the website, similar to going to Amazon, ordering whatever you need from Amazon. You go to velofix.com, type in your postal code, and we show up at your door, and we'll tune your bike for you.
What would you say is like the turnaround for servicing? Like, let's say I went on right now and put in my postal code and booked an appointment. Is it same day? Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
It is same day. So we work from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Obviously, there's a curfew right now, and those hours will be adjusted. But, let's just say we get past this and we're able to open up, we would be from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. or really any time that you need us to come by, we will pop by and tune your bike.
Okay. And so with COVID too, are you guys able to, like, is there any extra things that you guys are doing? Like, obviously mechanics probably wear masks. Or is it as simple as like, just leave it outside your door and we'll grab it?
That's it.
Can you coordinate that?
So we got a contactless service protocol where we call you, you text us. We text you and let you know when we're going to be there. We'll be at the address. We'll give you a heads up 5 to 10 minutes before you arrive on your doorstep. We'll pick your bike up. It'll be outside your door. We'll wipe it down. We'll sanitize it. The mechanic will do the work. We'll sanitize it again, and we'll deliver it right to your door, right to your doorstep or your place of work, wherever you may be, and ring the doorbell, and then go back to the van, and we'll send you an invoice digitally, and you can pay that online.
There you go. Simple. It sounds simple, simple to me. So.
It's actually funny. It's simpler than ever.
It saves you the hassle too of putting the bike. I know it's like getting grease on my seats in my car, and or you got to buy. I do have a bike rack now, but racking it up and going to the store. Like, everyone's on Zwift right now during winter, so. This has got to be, it doesn't change the fact that you still might need a tune-up if it's...
That's exactly it. I mean, kilometers are kilometers, right? You've got your chain running full speed, you've got your cassette, you have all kinds of parts that are in motion on the turbo trainer. So, if you're running some of those Zwift time trials or those Zwift races, and you got an e-cycling hub, which is becoming huge, you definitely want your bike primed and tuned on the turbo trainer, you're running as optimally as if you were competing in a race on the road. So yeah, I mean, indoor training and the the takeoff and the Zwift has really, really added velocity to our business.
Nice, and hopefully we got some nice mechanics too. So if you're a nice mechanic out there and you're out of a job, get a jump in a van and you can drive around the city to fix bikes.
That's right. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah. I got to say that's one experience I will never forget. And I'm not going to say what bike shop it is or whatever, but I'm sure other people can sympathize with my experience. But like when you're a first time person bringing it into the shop, and you know, you don't have the greatest experience, like you don't want to go back to that place, you know? So they're hard to find. And, it sounds like there's a pretty good solution out there for people that just want to stay home as they should during COVID and, get these bikes, up and running quickly and efficiently. So that's good.
Absolutely.
Jeremy, what would you say is your greatest accomplishment in endurance sports so far and in life, actually?
Geez, the greatest, I wouldn't say, honestly, I'd say my greatest accomplishment in running or in endurance is I ran the Toronto Half Marathon 2 years ago, and I just had a fantastic race. I had a great day. The weather was perfect. It was just, I know you've done that course several times, and I just love that half marathon course. I set a goal in mind, and I was able to come in under the goal, and it was just a fantastic day. The atmosphere was great. I loved the course. It was probably one of the best days I've had racing ever, and I was able to. I had my personal best. Had my personal best that day. I think it was 1:43 in that range, which is fast for me. I think my time. I think my coach and I targeted something in the 1:45 to 1:46 range would have been a success. So I came in under that, but it was just a wonderful experience. And it was actually on the airplane down. Funny story, on the air ride and the airplane down to that race, I actually proposed to my fiance. So it was just a really fun weekend and a great time. And on top of that, once we got that, you know, quote unquote, out of the way, and, you know, she, you know, thankfully said yes. We had a fantastic, race. She had a great time as well. And I, you know, just had a super, super cool day and was able to, you know, have a time that I was proud of. So that would be my biggest accomplishment, in endurance. And then, you know, my biggest accomplishment in life, I mean, that's such a big, vast question, but I think that, you know, going to the college and the school they wanted to go and just having, you know, really outstanding marks there and getting on the dean's list there was, you know, as a young adult, that was always a special moment that I'll never forget as well. So I'd have to say, you know, that's definitely up there. So a combination of, you know, that and then the half marathon endurance would be two key moments in my life that I'm super proud of.
Did you propose on the plane?
I did propose on the plane. It was an interesting story. She's like, she even asked me for a while. She goes, "Hey, do you think it's time?" I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely. I think it's time. It's going to happen. Don't worry about it." And she actually said before we left for that trip, she goes, "Geez, it'd be really interesting. Wouldn't it be a great time to get engaged?" And I actually had the ring in my bag, and I was just like, "Oh my God, this is hilarious." And she had no idea. She didn't know. So getting the ring through airport security and, you know, all that. So it was actually in my pocket, and, you know, I just had this, you know, these dark thoughts that, like, you know, if anything happens on this plane ride, we go down, like, she'll never know that I wanted to marry her. So I said, geez, I might just ask her now. So it was probably, you know, it would look like, you know, 25, 30 kilometers outside of Billy Bishop Airport before we're going to land. I said, "Hey, please, will you marry me?" So I pulled out the ring and she said yes. So, you know, an awkward, clumsy moment, but, yeah. Definitely memorable all the same. So yeah, I wish it was a better story, but it was something I'll never forget. Probably something she'll never forget either.
Yeah, not a common way to propose.
Yeah, definitely not a traditional method. No.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's great. Do you remember, so I mean, that might have been the reason why you performed so well in that race weekend, but was there anything different about that race weekend, or was it something leading up? Was it just an overall feeling? Was it the weather? Like,
yeah, I think it was an overall feeling. I think my last two key workouts there was just some long, challenging intervals. And I think the intervals were, you know, pretty much four sets of 12 minutes at, you know, probably 5% faster than race pace. And I was able to knock those out of the park. And that was a really good feeling. And I kind of had indications there that I was starting to, you know, get a little bit quicker and able to kind of carry that speed for longer distances. So that workout was a super key workout. You know, my diet was on point. So I knew I was ready. And, the hay was in the barn. It was just a matter of going out and executing. And, you know, everyone knows that that's a fast course and a really fun course. So it was just a matter of, you know, having a well-executed training plan with my tri coach, Marc Flageol, and it just came together. And it was just something I'll never forget. And to this day, that's still my fastest race. And then, you know, we haven't raced in, you know, well over a year, and I haven't had ran a half marathon since. And that speed, or that interval speed, is still my 21K race pace. And I'm looking forward to speeding that up again. And my goal, hopefully whenever we do another, you know, 70.3 again, is to, you know, run that same marathon or half marathon time a little bit faster than that in my next 70.3 event. So that's my next goal. And I haven't told many people about that. Like I said, do the hard work, put in the efforts, and take what race day gives you. And 9 times out of 10, you should be happy with yourself.
For sure. What's the end goal for you?
Honestly, the end goal would be, is just to keep doing this as long as I can. I mean, that's the end goal, is that, you know, if I'm, you know, in my 60s and 65 and still being able to do, you know, 70.3s and, you know, solid marathon times, that would be the end goal for me. I'm not an exceptionally gifted, you know, endurance athlete. I mean, I need to work hard to, you know, to maintain and to achieve what I have. I mean, I did have visions of maybe, you know, one day seeing if I can get to the 70.3 world championships at, you know, whatever age group I am at that time. But, you know, I quickly realized that, you know, those times in the, you know, those amateur times in the age groups are absolutely unbelievable achievements. So I don't know if that's realistic, but, you know, being able to, you know, continue doing this and having fun doing it well into my 60s would be, you know, something I would be, you know, more than happy with achieving.
Mm-hmm. What is running or endurance sports taught you?
It's just that, you know, progression is, we all look at something. We all look at our goals as like the final end goal. We look at it as a start line and a finish line, or our goals are typically a start line and a finish line, right? It's all the minutia in the middle that is just messy, you know, backwards, convoluted, all over the place. And it's just incremental tiny steps of progression along the way, and we often overlook that, and you know, getting through that and managing that and doing a good job of sorting that all and compartmentalizing things to get to your final goal, that's where everything is won, and kind of in the in-between stages. And that's really spills over and carries over into life, and that's what I really take away from these sports, whether it's, you know, working on a business, working on your career, working on your relationship. You just see, you know, you see where you are today, and you know where you want to be in, you know, said period of time, but you just overlook all, you know, the idiosyncrasies and the minutia of actually doing it. And it's hard, and it's incremental, and, you know, being able to manage that and continue to move forward is, you know, something that, you know, endurance sports has really, really taught me.
Mm. Is there anybody like that you train with, or that you've met along the way that's inspired you?
Yeah, my coach has been super inspiring with me. He's just a, you know, brilliant guy, fantastic athlete. You know, he's a shorter guy. He's in good shape. He just looks like a really fit guy. But you wouldn't look at this guy and think that, hey, that guy's one of the best 50-year-old triathletes on the planet, right? Mm-hmm. And he is, and he's super humble, and, you know, he's not the best biker, he's not the best swimmer, he's not the best runner, but he's just really finds a way to put it together and just, you know, drills it and drives it home on race day. He's super, super, you know, motivating to me. And, you know, I would say that, you know, you're a big influence on me, like seeing you just kind of get in the sport and just, you know, put in the, you know, you take a look and you see the accomplishments, right? But, you know, seeing you run that fantastic half marathon time in Ottawa was unbelievable. And we knew how hard you trained and the hours and all the training to put into it. You know, you just, you don't see that piece, right? You just kind of see the end goal. You always see the end goal, right? You see it on Instagram, you see the finish lines, you see the photos, but it's the, you know, it's the 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 hours in between there that, you know, just seeing the drive and how these people, you know, consistently knock out quality workout after quality workout is really, really, really amazing. Mm-hmm. And then of course you've got, you know, you got the world of multi-sport, and we've got, you know, really two really strong Canadians in it right now with Lionel Sanders, you know, as one of the top females out there, and, you know, Paula Finley hitting her stride again and, you know, doing amazing things, you know, on social media with her husband or her boyfriend, as well as, you know, her fantastic results at Challenge Daytona. You know, looking up to those two people kind of at the professional ranks is always fun as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun to see them perform on the world stage among some of the best out there. And Lionel's got so much grit, and does Paula, of course. And
Lionel is.
They're two people. They're two.
Lionel's amazing. Yeah, and Lionel just takes it so seriously, and he's always challenging himself in every little single aspect of life. And it's good to, it's always good to flip on his YouTube if you need a little extra motivation to complete a key workout.
Yeah. What's something that you've done that you never in your wildest dreams that could have imagined that you would have done? Is it the 70.3s or?
I would say the 70.3, no. I would say my first two marathons are just two things I would never envision myself doing at any stage of my life. Like running a 10K and running, you know, a 5K and a half marathon, it is definitely something that you can do recreationally. But training for a marathon is something that I never thought I would did or do. And yeah, it was just getting those first two marathons was a really, really cool accomplishment. And yeah, super unique. And, you know, really, really just didn't see myself A, really having the interest in doing it, or B, you know, finishing and completing it once you started the training. And, you know, obviously, you know, training in Canada is always an interesting time, especially this time of year, getting out for super long workouts on, you know, Sunday afternoons when it's minus 23 and there's, you know, 15 centimeters of snow out there is never easy. So yeah, I would have to say, you know, completing and running, you know, a marathon or two is something that I never envisioned myself doing, where, you know, triathlon or at least 70.3, I always did. I just thought that, yeah, I always thought it was super cool. And, you know, triathletes are just some of the, you know, most badass, toughest people on the planet in my eyes. And I always wanted to see what that was like. So I could always see myself envisioning at least doing a 70.3, but an actual marathon, not as much.
Mm-hmm. We got to get you out to Boston next.
One day, that'd be great.
is that a marathon goal for you to be able to achieve that? Or I know for some people it doesn't, the allure isn't there, but.
Yeah, Boston's like this.
I didn't think I would go until I actually got the qualifier, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just a magical, mystical place, right? I always remember, you know, my dad was into long distance running a lot in his 30s, and I was a youngster, and he was always, you know, running, and, you know, he always talked about the Boston Marathon, he'd always watch it. And it's just one of those classic, you know, mystical sporting events. And yeah, I would love to one day be able to get into the Boston Marathon, but the times these people are running are just so incredibly legit that it's a tall order. Mm-hmm. It is a tall order. Anyone that gets to line up in the Boston Marathon is begin with an exceptional athlete, B has put in a lot of training, and they're just flat out fast. I think for my age, I'd have to be in the 307, 310 range, or maybe luck out and get in. And I'm definitely not there. So yes, that's a big yes, but it's a tall mountain to climb, and my hat's off to anyone that's put in the work and being able to accomplish getting into the Boston Marathon.
Same here. And I hope one day you get to total line. It's an experience, that whole thing. It is something else. Yeah. It's fun for sure. Having done it multiple times, but still I'm hungry to go back and race it again. And as a different kind of athlete and a different challenge, you know, so
yeah,
What does running and endurance sports mean to you?
Yeah, I think it's hard work and dedication, right? It comes in, and you got to be passionate about it, right? First, you need to be passionate and you need to love it, but it's just that. It's that hard work, dedication component that, you know, anything in life worth doing or wanting to do, you need to work hard and you need to be dedicated to it. And, you know, there's a lot of competitive people out there, and to stand out and have success in the sport just takes a lot of dedication, and you're going to have good days and bad days, but it's, you know, dusting yourself back up and getting out there and doing the prescribed workout and doing that to the best of your ability. And also finding a way to make it all work, right? I mean, sometimes you're just going to try to get through a key workout and survive and get into the next day. And then sometimes you actually kill it and overachieve it. So it's just consistently getting out there and taking care of that micro goal in a whole, you know, massive series of workouts. You know, getting through that micro goal, which is the workout of the day, and consistently doing that is what, you know, endurance sports or running means to me, and just life in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not all going to be perfect days. You have
no.
to have those, you know, one out of three is going to be a great day, you know, and that's what training's all about, especially when you're training for these longer journeys, these longer endurance races, whether it's an ultra marathon or triathlon or marathon even. And it doesn't even have to be that long. For some people, 5K is like a marathon. So it just depends what level you're at. And, you know, you can always gradually climb up the ladder and keep building upon what you've done. But, yeah, for starters, I know I started with a 10K, and that was like my marathon at the time. It comes with time, and the process, it comes up time and time again, is the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's funny. It's easier if you're in your. Would you agree that if you're in your best marathon shape, you're going to run your best 10K?
Oh, personally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the goal, is to get faster on the shorter stuff, and then hopefully that, like, the endurance is there. I need to build the strength to be able to do those faster times in those shorter workouts, I think, and then. Yeah, it should translate, I think. Yeah, I've actually, you know, recently we spoke about it a little bit, but reflecting on, you know, my triathlon days, like I felt like my fitness was at a different level. So now just focusing on running, I definitely have to incorporate other things like the strength training and to be able to put my, like, get my body in shape to be able to have the results that I want. You know, just the running alone, I don't think is enough. I think if you look at elite athletes everywhere, they're all doing some level of strength or lifting or supplementary work to strengthen their bodies to be able to handle their pace at, you know, for as long as they do, which is, you know, at their level, it's about, you know, in the 210, 205, depending who you are. If it's Kipchoge, it's under 2 hours or 2 hours. So,
yeah,
being able to have a strong body to be able to do the things you want to do in life, you know, and whether that's running or climbing or biking or whatever it is, you know, so.
I agree.
Yeah, it's more than just the activity, but preparing your body to be able to handle the work, you know. Jeremy, where can people find out more about you? And like personally, I know you have Instagram, and also if you want to check out what you have to offer on VeloFix.
Yeah. So personally, I mean, you can reach me at Jeremy J. Cochran at Instagram, and then LinkedIn, Jeremy Cochran as well. And then if you're in the Montreal area and they are in the Quebec area and need a bike tune or need a consultation with a bike fit or anything related to that, you can go to velofix.com and go to book now, type in your postal code, book a time slot, and we'll show up on your door and we'll do our best to help you out.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much for your time. I've loved hearing your story and your journey, and thanks for sharing it with us. I think what's important about this podcast, and I try and convey it, is that, you know, we're not all elite athletes. I'm not. by any means, and neither will our guests. I think everyone's got a story to tell, and I appreciate you sharing yours, and I think there's something valuable in what everybody has to say.
I agree. Yeah, endurance sports are very good dress rehearsal for life in general, and you know, getting out there and doing your best and showing up and making things work is what it's all about. And I, like I said, I've really enjoyed watching your career and the progression you've had, you know, as an entrepreneur and of course as an endurance athlete. So I really enjoyed our conversation, and I look forward to future episodes.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeremy. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Are you already subscribed to La Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at La Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
La Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.